Thank you, Catherine, and thank you, Nancy Krieger, for inviting us here to be part of the Spirit of 1848 sessions, and also a shout-out to the Kellogg Foundation, the California Endowment, and the CDC for their continuing support for this project. Everyone should go visit the California Endowment exhibit on the floor. It's terrific. What's the exhibit number? It's right in the middle. How can you miss? Look for the orange shirts. First, as Catherine mentioned, we've changed our name. It's no longer American Birthright. It's the Raising of America. And what we're going to do here very briefly is I'm going to describe the series and some of the conceptual and messaging challenges we're facing as we're making it. Rochelle will talk briefly about the public engagement campaign within which this will all be folded. Then we're going to show a very much work in progress clip because we are shooting now. And then after that, we would like to elicit some of your input, and Rochelle will lead that discussion. So we have an ambitious goal here, I think. It's basically to tell a new story, to help Americans reframe the way we look at early child health and development. One that links a strong start, not just to better individual outcomes, both physical, socio-emotional, and in the cognitive realm, but also for a more prosperous, healthier, safer, indeed more equitable nation. But the arrow moves the other way as well, and this is something we need to try to make a connection for in this show, is how a more equitable nation also, as the previous speaker, Dr. Palmer, pointed out, tends to give us a better opportunity for a strong start. So what our infants and toddlers need to thrive really isn't a mystery. They need basically a nurturing social ecology, basically something that is safe, stable, caring, and stimulating. This has been around in one form or another for a long time. So the real question is, why aren't we making any progress? What's going on? So our goals here is this one, right? Okay. In essence, our goals are rather simple but profound. First is to sort of impel a sense of urgency and incite passion for the transformative changes that can make a tremendous difference for all our children and indeed for our nation. Second is to enlarge and widen the locus of public debate, right? Take that away from just the individual child and their parents, that family bubble, to that larger social ecology, which consists of not just the family, but also, of course, the neighborhood, providers, our social and economic arrangements, and indeed our politics. The third is to try to render visible that web of relations, the social, economic, and political structures, which indeed connect our shared faiths. And finally, perhaps most the biggest challenge of all, is can we imagine, can we envision a new set of arrangements, a new world, a world that would provide every infant an equal opportunity childhood? How do we imagine that which is not yet there? Well, we're trying to do this through several elements to this. It is a 7-part documentary series, which will be broadcast, we hope, tentatively around this time next year. It'll be finished, we hope, late spring or maybe in the summer. There'll be shorter 2 to 5 minute video conceptual units, a set of companion tools, discussion guides, interactives, viral videos, and so forth, all of which will be nested in a digital platform in an online learning center. And these, of course, resources all being created in the context of this broader public engagement campaign. It's sort of the model that we use for natural causes, but we hope to integrate into that many of the lessons that we've learned. Now, the evidence that we've seen so far is fairly compelling. At least, as I said, it links strong starts not just to individual life course outcomes, but indeed to a healthier, more equitable, more happier, and indeed prosperous country. But how do we tell that story in a way that doesn't further individualize, depoliticize, and dehistoricize the story, which is the way in which myth was often told? So really, the real subject, then, is not so much what's on the screen, but what sits before it are the audience, or more precisely, the preconceptions that the audience brings to the show.
Does this work?
Okay. There are, so I just want to quickly go through several of these frames, because this is what we're grappling with. And the first is that the early years don't matter. But we're trying to show it's important that babies don't remember, but indeed, the early years matter more than we think. Nancy Krieger, in our earlier show, we started on natural causes with this notion that we carry our history in our bodies. And indeed, growing evidence suggests that early life even can help wire the developing brain and other bioregulatory set points. So however, do we talk about the importance of the early years without triggering yet a new determinism? How do we also keep alive in people's heads at the same time that while it's important to create a strong foundation, certainly easier than to retrofit later, that fates are not set, certain that the end of life is not the age of five. In the set, another part, what relates to this is the idea that genes are not our destiny. Lori Dorfman put it well. She said, what surrounds us shapes us. So, again, we're looking at the ways in which the outside, what science is beginning to understand, can actually get under the skin, and because we don't believe in magic, and actually shape or influence our biology. We also want to widen the attention from negligent parents to the negligence of society. The conventional belief is when kids aren't doing well, parents have just made bad choices. Now, as a parent, I know there's some truth to that. But it's only a partial truth. So how do we widen this locus of debate and get the focus not just I'm trying to speak fast because we have little time. part of this is a quote from Jeannie Brooks Gunn that stayed with us where she says, you know, we have huge inequities, but few seem to care. Instead, we blame the parents. But parents are enmeshed in a web of relations that can constrain or enhance what they can provide. And you know, more than 15 years ago, Cornel West and Sylvia Ann Hewlett wrote a book called The War Against Parents. But what happened to that? Or the idea of trying to follow up on that? Next thing is this idea of poverty. And I want to take one moment here because there is a new discourse out that's evolving based upon Paul Tuck's new book, How Children Succeed. I don't know if people may have noticed there was some columns in the by Nick Kristof and even by David Brooks in the New York Times about the importance of early child education as the answer to everything this American life. But the problem that we need to address when looking at this, and we think obviously early education and early care is absolutely critical, is that in talking about poverty, how do you do that in such a way that poverty is not postulated as a deficit, as a lack of services and jobs, yes, but also, say, a lack of role models, a lack of fathers, a lack of proper temperament. So instead, what if we switched our lens from poverty as a lack to poverty as exploitation? Or in other words, who benefits from poverty? Does poverty just exist? Does it just happen? Does it spring forth fully formed? Or as indeed, is there also a way, by talking about poverty this way, can we also draw linkages with the middle class, the shrinking middle class, who also are not just are having their pensions taken away, losing their homes, also being exploited in many ways by the same forces, as we know. So poverty robs poor communities at every turn, but also we see that there is a form of exploitation that is also affecting the way in which parents in general squeezing them for time, squeezing us for money, and squeezing us for resources, and how does that stress literally drip down and shape and influence our children. So finally, strong communities can build healthy children. So this is an issue both of evidence, but also of belief systems or ideologies. And it's important, I think, that we begin to address the simplifying models by which people use to interpret the evidence, to make sense of evidence. So that they don't just make the facts fit the policy, or more precisely the values or simplifying models or frames that they bring to this. I am going to stop right here, actually, because other than that, most of all, we need to incite a sense of urgency. I want to turn this over to Rochelle, who will talk briefly about the engagement campaign, and then, because I know we want to show the clip and we want your time for your discussion about that. And I'm sorry to have everything feeling rushed.
Thank you, Larry.
So yes, to go from here, what Larry shared is a lot of what we are grappling with, and how do we tell this story? How do we translate and incite passion and really not put forward a new sense of determinism? So that's what we're trying to do in the show. And the show is organized into 7 different episodes. There's the opening show, which is 60 minutes. And here we're really wanting to set out what are these competing ideologies and how do we put forward changes that truly make a difference. And so I invite all of us. A lot of times we come here and we come with our professional hat on. And we were invited to one conference, and I said, who will be there? And I got a list of different professions who will be there, and then the person said, we'll also have parents. Okay, well, I know a lot of the professionals are also parents, and so it's really wanting to be able to blend all of our lives and invite that to come together. This is what we're trying to do. So what the opening show does is to really explore the science of early child health and development, so to really raise awareness that there's a lot going on. There's a little baby who might not be able to talk, but there's a lot going on in that brain, that we have to really, again, put parents in the context of our larger society. So what is the squeeze on parents? Squeeze for time, for money, for resources, and that we experience this from poverty up through the middle class, and then we have the 1%, and there's the 1%. But really, that a lot of us are experiencing this kind of squeeze, and so like Larry said, we can't just blame the parents. We do, however, of course, need to hold parents responsible. And that we have to ask the question as to why. Why is this happening? Where is this squeeze, the so-called squeeze, coming from? Well, from policies, or really the lack thereof. So that we are a country, the only developed, well, I don't like that term, but rich nation, not to offer paid parental leave, that we don't guarantee quality, affordable child care. There is something amiss here that we don't do this, and it comes back to what are our ideologies that are driving our systems forward. So in addition to the opening show, we have a set of shorter 25-minute episodes. We look at the history of child and family policy. We could have had affordable quality care, child care for all of us, but we don't. What happened? We look very much at the science. So how does our environment, how does stress drip down on our children and actually change what's happening in the developing brain? We look at trauma. We need to very much say what happens when we experience trauma, whether it's as young kids, whether it's as youth. What happens to us in that sense? And then, of course, there's the costs and benefits of really the dollars and cents, that when we look down to it, it makes a lot of sense financially for us to invest early, and yet we're not doing it. So it comes back again to what are our ideologies that drive the kinds of decisions that we make or don't make as a nation. We look at play. We're really focused on educational achievement, and there are all kinds of things out there so that your small child can do better and excel right now. Well, what about play? And that can be a little bit poo-pooed, you know? Oh, no, there's no time for that. But there's a lot that's going on, a lot in the ways that kids are developing, whether it's from their fine motor skills, gross motor skills, whether it's just learning how to interact and negotiate with one another because they're engaging in the kind of play where it is not, there aren't rules and there's not an adult saying, this is how you do it. And finally, we absolutely have to look at the increased weight of growing up and being born into poverty. What does that do to our individual kids? What does that do to our families? And what does that do to us as a nation? So that, in essence, is really the 7 episodes of the show. What we're looking to do with the Raising of America is to really put forward and invite you to use this as a tool to make a nurturing child ecology the birthright of every infant in the United States. And so what that really means is, how can you use this tool, this forthcoming tool, to build awareness about the importance of early experience, to advance a new discourse. And this really speaks to what Larry was talking about, where we need to, as a society, value and enable that all our kids have access to safe, secure, stimulating, and caring environments, that becomes a priority for us. And that, of course, how do we organize and advocate for these kinds of transformative initiatives and policies that tackle inequities and that benefit all our kids? So, no, a documentary series on its own won't do that, but in your hands, as a tool to spark that kind of dialogue, that kind of engagement, that kind of action, that's what we hope it can do. A couple of proverbs. If you want 1 year of prosperity, grow grain. If you want 10 years of prosperity, grow trees. If you want 100 years of prosperity, grow people. It is easier to build strong children than repair broken men. So that's what influences us as we go forward in a public engagement campaign, and there are different components here. Of course, there's the national PBS broadcast. There are press relations, really wanting to get into popular press, but also all kinds of other press outlets, that we want and we will create an interactive companion website where we can host tools and resources for folks to be able to use the series and say, all right, well, here's a discussion guide, here's a toolkit, here are handouts, here are other resources. And one of the pieces that we have is an early childhood database, basically, of organizations, initiatives, and resources that we invite you to populate with the work that you're doing. Of course, we'll do educational disseminations to our libraries, our high schools, our universities, and then there's the place of engagement screenings, forums, briefings, and dialogues. And for that, of course, inviting folks who are doing the work around early child health and development. But again, as we did with the natural causes, going outside of that sector, so racial justice, affordable housing, living wage jobs, public health, really knowing that we can't just exist in our silos, that we need to work across the different silos and start communicating with one another and come up with this new vision that Larry is putting forward. Well, not just Larry, but all of us. Larry is putting this vision forward. Of course, working with government officials and community-based organizations. Using versus watching, and a lot of you have experienced this in natural causes, so I don't need to go into this too much, but it's the difference between sitting back and watching, oh, show me what you've got, or leaning forward and thinking, how do I use this? How do I engage this? So what kinds of screenings make the most sense for you, whether it's being a part of launch events, using this internally with staff, going out to the community and saying, let's come together and have a dialogue, conferences, going across sectors, policy forums and briefings, of course, media briefings. We've got to help our media know how to talk about this, because media, there's a tendency to come back to the individual, which can very easily lead to blaming that individual. And of course, as Larry said, we're tentatively scheduled for next fall, but how do you work with your own PBS station to do outreach with Unnatural Causes? Sonoma County created their own version, Unnatural Causes in Sonoma County, which is a great way to take hold and make this yours. So just a couple of engaged examples, and then we will watch a clip, I promise. So NACHO, National Association of County and City Health Officials, who was instrumental with Unnatural Causes, is coming back and working again with us. And really here, one of the lessons learned is how do we not just say, here's the series, go out into the community, but say, let's come inside and let's talk. Let's have trainings. Let's look at what it is that we're doing it inside local public health departments, and where does that sort of change need to happen as far as our own ideologies. So starting at home, and then from there, having a firm foundation in which to go out into the community and host more screenings. And that's something I invite all of us to think about. We are all in this country and in a certain mode of thinking, so how do we question and reflect where we are? The Council of Community Pediatrics of the American Academy of Pediatrics is very interested in being able to use the series and doing a number of things. So, of course, recommending it to the pediatricians, but creating an actual discussion guide or toolkit for pediatricians, working with residents. You know, as someone told us, residents are the ones who are coming up. We really need to make sure that they have this larger perspective. So it's not just me and the child that I'm treating, but I know that this kid is going back into a neighborhood, and what does that mean? So we start to move away from non-compliance in that sort of has a not so great connotation to it. And of course, also working on the policy level. So how is it that we bring this to the Hill? How is it that we start to translate this kind of work into policy changes? And Voices for America's Children is also taking a lead in being able to organize launch events in at least 20 different cities in the country to be able to say, here is this new series that's coming out, showing perhaps the opening show, having a panel of speakers, and from there inviting others to engage in the dialogue, to engage in this work in this way. Again, it's not the series that in and of itself is creating this change, but it's the way in which it's being used, and it's folks being pulled together to be able to have this dialogue in community. One of the things that some of you, I'm sure, have heard me say this before, you know, I'll watch something on PBS and think, I'm making a change. I'm getting involved. Absolutely. And then the credits roll, and then my dog needs to go out, and I need to do the dishes. And it's not that the intention wasn't there. It's that I wasn't in a space where after seeing something and being moved, there was the opportunity right then and there to be able to say, this is how I could make a change. This is what it would be to bring it back to my work, to bring it back to my community. So all of this to say, really in essence, that what we're trying to do here is to reframe the way we look at early child health and development. That said, we're going to show you a clip. Now, I will tell you this. This is a work in progress clip. We are still out there filming and shooting. We've shown this clip several times in the last 2 weeks, and we've already gotten enough feedback that our team who's editing is working on a new version. So we invite you to very much think about not only how you might use this in your work, but where are you engaged? That's that leaning forward. Where are you perhaps not as engaged? Then you're thinking about the next session you're going to. And we welcome your feedback. And in the back of the room, you'll find both a postcard as well as a sign-up sheet so that you can get on our mailing list if you're not already on the mailing list. That said, let's watch. There are lights. I'm sure there is. I don't know where. Well, we'll go anyway.
Once upon a time, even without knowing the brain science we know today, we understood our children's very first years of life were important for their emotional, intellectual, and physical well-being as adults. So important that a coalition of citizens and activists called upon Congress to support early child development.
The House gave final congressional approval today for a program of child.
In 1971, a bipartisan majority of Congress passed the Comprehensive Child Development Act, complete with parental supports, medical services, and high-quality, affordable early care for all children up to age 5.
It is, in my opinion, the most single important new public policy needed in America today, both in terms of the pocketbook and in terms of our heart and the moral standards of American society.
At the 11th hour, President Nixon vetoed the bill. His veto statement was written by a rising conservative White House aide, Pat Buchanan.
I said, it costs too much. We can't afford it. And I want to write a veto at the same time, which is political and ideological. We believe in family-centered society, and the idea that it takes a village is not one we should.
40 years later, this do-it-on-your-own ideology is embedded in many of our political, social, and economic policies. In those 40 years, we've seen the well-being of American children drop to 19th out of the top 20 richest nations. More and more of our kids today grow up anxious, depressed, obese, don't finish high school, and underperform in math and science. Middle-class wages have fallen. Parents are working harder and longer with fewer resources. As families spend for themselves, the fallout is felt by our children.
We know that the day-to-day living, particularly for families who are dealing with multiple stresses, are kind of a headline by the state of your parents. A lot of people doing magnificent jobs kind of balance a lot of stress. From a child's point of view, it would be a pretty chaotic environment. How can we provide supports to help families who are dealing with stresses? If we don't figure out how to get to the heart of those problems, then we're not going to get issues that are interfering with children's development.
My family is
returned to work before their babies are 3 months old. Some because they want to, most because they need to. And what kind of early child care can most parents find? Just look at the numbers. Our child development resources rank 16th in affordability, 22nd in quality, 31st in availability.
The first 3 years are really the building block for the rest of a baby's life, of an adult's life.
Babies are born with hundreds of millions of neurons that aren't terribly well organized. Synapses are communicating with each other, and with repeated experiences, they strengthen or they don't.
The brain is created by interactions between the child and the environment that they're in.
One of the wonderful things about the brain is that it is a very plastic organ, and it continues developing until old age. So there is always the possibility of change and the possibility of overcoming one circumstance.
But what if a child's circumstances are marked by multiple adversities? The United States ranks 34th out of 35 rich nations in child poverty rates, with only Romania behind us.
We think we are invisible in the neighborhood. This is a big neighborhood. And many families think that they are invisible. They are working for us.
We know from animal studies that the very structure of an infant's brain can be altered as parental stress drips down onto their offspring.
We can see significantly less expression of the glucocorticoid receptor,
especially the stress of scarce resources. Here, one mother rat is provided with good nesting material, the other with inadequate material.
She is very anxious.
Like trying to build a nest in the middle of the desert.
The simple removing of a basic resource increases stress levels in the rat mother, compromises parental care, influences the developing offspring.
New research is showing the effects in humanness. A groundbreaking study tracking hundreds of children from infancy to adolescence offers stunning evidence of brain changes correlated to even common stressors. Stressors like financial insecurity, marital discord, depression, isolation. With parents and children increasingly squeezed for time, money, and resources, why does a nation that claims to be family-centered offer so little to support them? One taxpayer-supported institution believes that the village and the supports it offers does that. Thanks to the Military Child Care Assistance Act, passed 18 years after Nixon vetoed similar legislation for civilians, our armed forces have child development programs that are among the highest quality and most affordable in the nation.
The most important thing to us is always that when we deploy, our families are taken care of. Our families are taken care of. There's a sense of security out there that we don't have to worry about them, and we can concentrate on the mission.
If we can support the families of our armed forces, why not our civilian workforce, who protect American prosperity and their children, the engine of our future prosperity? Economists have studied programs that invest in child development and family supports, and have calculated their economic value in the range of an astounding 15-to-1 return on investment.
Not just one study, there are actually 4 independent longitudinal studies on early end, all getting very, very high annual rates of return in the double-digit range. benefits are public benefits.
So if you were a financial planner, an investor, or if you were a doctor, if somebody asked me, where are you going to put my money? In the stock market or in a young child? You'd say, in a young child. Because you're going to get a bigger effect on the earnings of the child in terms of reducing crime, reducing incarceration, reduced living social problems.
A strong start in the early years doesn't just reduce social costs. It leads to the kind of lives and society we want for our children. More productive, healthier, even happier.
There's never been a societal problem or issue where we have had so much information and done so little with it. Between the neuroscience and the economic literature, which is just this explosion of information that no one is disputing, but we're still not acting on it.
We don't just have achievement gap in the country, we have hypothesis gap.
We need to be investing in the early years.
There we have it, our work in progress clip. So, we'd love to open it up for questions, thoughts, comments that you might have. Yes. Go right ahead.
My brother-in-law is a Baptist, and he's a retired sergeant in the National Guard in the Army. And I'm wondering what he would think of this. He might say, what's the role of the church? Can we bring the church in? I'm sure if you showed it to those soldiers, a lot of them,
so the comment is, would folks in the Army perhaps respond with, as an example, where is the church and what is the role of the church? And I would say that would be interesting to see if that's part of our response. And on the other hand, there is definitely for us and part of our outreach wanting to bring in churches to be able to talk to and how do we care. Now, as far as the role of our choices are and our religious affiliations, that is not something in which we are going to dabble in because that's where someone comes from. Thank you. Yes? So the question and the reflection is that it can be very challenging to translate what we mean by social justice and health equity and equity work into storytelling. And so are there lessons that we've learned from unnatural causes and how we do that? And I'll start off by saying that we're very much struggling with that piece of how do you present individual stories. That's the place that grabs us. That's how it moves the heart, is to learn about individuals and to be able to have, for example, a child that by the end of this, you'll be asking, you know, how's Caleb doing? I want to know about Caleb. Without then saying, well, are Caleb's parents doing this, that, and the next thing? So it's a fine balance. And I think that what we've learned with unnatural causes is that at least in the filmmaking, and Larry, please step in, is that the balance between being able to present science, being able to present data, and doing that in the context of the story, marrying those two together, is what helps people have the aha moment and take it beyond the individual. That place also where one can see oneself. So in unnatural causes, for those of you who are familiar, we talked about the health gradient, and we showed the ladder of the health gradient. Folks could immediately sort of place themselves, where am I on this gradient? But remember, because of the science that we shared, that, oh, we're talking about population health. So that's the way in which we try and do this. Now, have we found the 1-2-3 easy solution to do this? Absolutely not. And so that's something that we do grapple with.
I think the other thing we've learned is the importance of history. In other words, what is wasn't always this way. It could, in fact, be another way. Not only are other countries doing it differently, but we ourselves have in the past. We're not obviously going to lead with the story that we had here in the opening. In fact, that's not even going to be in the trailer. But the fact is, there's a real interesting American history which zigzags to the 20th century, where some progress was made. Where, in fact, the 1971 Child Care and the Child Development Act was seen as the logical next step. Why did it turn? Why did we have this U-turn? What happened? How did the power and forces consolidate against that so things changed? So I think that's one way in which we're trying to address this issue of these larger structures.
Yes, so in part, and others of you may have felt this, that starting off with Amondale puts us immediately in opposition. And so this is the feedback that we have gotten. And so while it will not be what we start the trailer off with, we will absolutely be telling that story, because we're not shy about going by and saying, this actually happened. So we're not going to take that off, but we won't lead in that way. And so that's why Larry said as well, we've gotten the feedback and we're hearing you that is not the way to start, even though we quite like this.
We've already cut the first 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. In the back.
Yeah, and I also find that starting off with a political piece, it's hard to appreciate how outrageous it is what happened, that show. We didn't get the science piece before explaining about the importance of child development and how it impacts on the rest of their life. If you don't have that information beforehand, it's hard to understand, to appreciate what happened in the past. So I would suggest you start off with the science piece, go on with the political and historical piece, explain what happened, and you end up on a positive note about how other countries have applied the policy, the child well-being policy. And even an example shows the story of an individual who benefits from social policy.
Thank you. And just for those who didn't hear, it's about changing the structure so we understand the science first, and then we have the understand the impact of having a policy that didn't go through in that way. So I'm shortening, but thank you for your suggestion. All right, one more comment, Nancy.
Thank you.
I just want to make, again, a distinction between, remember, the trail, this is sort of just a sample of some of the things we're going to be shooting, have been shooting, and indeed the final film. And but it is thanks to conversations like this and other and with series of focus group screenings and other screenings we're going to hold, that hopefully there'll be a series of, we'll learn from these and be able to eventually get a piece that really works. So yeah. Thank you for your help.
Thank you. And just a I'll say just the last word. Come up and talk with us. Share your feedback. And we very much want this to push that envelope in all kinds of ways to really build the fire and the momentum, because we need to make change. Thank you.
Just a final thanks to all of our speakers. Thanks so much for your participation. I have to let you go now.
You're ready to go.